Colin Morikawa may have just blown his chance. He made double bogey at 9. He's still only 3 shots off the pace, so probably still in contention, but gee, mentally he'll have to come back from that, turning for home. But Scheffler's back to 1-under for the day through 9, 8-under for the tournament, a shot ahead of Max Homa and Ludvig Åberg, this Swedish player playing his first major tournament. And Cam Smith still at 1-under for the day through 12 holes, 2-under for the tournament, 6 shots off the pace. Adam Pengilly is watching it all. How are you, Adam?
Morning, Mido. Morning, boys. And, shaping up for a dramatic finish, Mido. I don't know if you guys have had much chance to watch it, but Scottie Scheffler's probably produced the shot of the tournament on 9. He almost holed out for eagle from the middle of the fairway, and his playing partner, Colin Morikawa, chopped it up for a double bogey. So that might be a huge turning point in where the green jacket goes at the end of the day.
Okay, who's your money with now? Probably Scheffler?
I think Scheffler's probably deserves to be favourite, but this Swede, Ludvig Åberg, he is remarkable, Mido. He's playing his first major tournament, obviously. The thing that most impresses me about him is just his demeanour. Like, it doesn't seem like he gets flustered about anything. He just seems so cool and calm and relaxed, and he's got some serious, serious games. So I think Scheffler deserves to be favourite as it stands right now. But what I will say is I've got up and watched pretty much from the opening tee shot for the final group this morning. He hasn't had his best game today, Scottie Scheffler. He's obviously been a little bit off in certain parts of his game, but the experience is obviously on his side, having won at Augusta a couple of years ago. So, yeah, he's my tip at the moment. I think he deserves to be just favourite, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Ludvig Åberg come out on top.
Yeah, we've just watched his approach to 9 there, Berkey Scheffler. Ridiculous. Aussies overall, what have you made of them?
Yeah, I've been watching a fair bit this morning, Mido. Cam Smith has been playing some pretty solid golf today. He just can't quite bang down the door to try and get in contention. He chipped in out of the greenside bunker on the second for eagle, and you thought, okay, he might be on today. He got back to within 4 shots, I think it was, of the lead. And then he's just been going par, par, par. He's hit a couple of wayward drives and just scrambled pars. Hasn't quite been able to get in contention. Cameron Davis has been a little bit up and down so far today, so you'd have to say, Mido, as it stands right now, they're a little bit too far back to get in contention. I think Cameron Smith is still 6 shots behind, but he'll be trying to get a top 5 finish and obviously have some good vibes leaving Augusta National this week.
Very quickly, mate, to get your take on, so the reigning champ, John Rahm, no good, went across the live. Brooks Koepka, no good. You know, you're looking at Cam Smith there. He's there or thereabouts. But has the limited format maybe hindered their match play in 4 rounds, mate?
Yeah, it's a really good question you asked, Berkey, because Liv obviously have that limited schedule. They tried to play a little bit more golf this year. I think they had 4 tournaments before they came into the Masters this year. But my argument would be it's still not quite enough. I don't think these guys are quite, you know, match fit or as sharp as some of the PGA Tour guys who are virtually playing week in, week out and can plot their schedule a little bit better heading into Augusta. So you're right. Some of the big guns at Liv haven't quite lived up to expectation this week. Cameron Smith has been the best of them so far. And I think Tyrrell Hatton's had a pretty good final round. But at the moment, as it stands, the leaderboard's dominated by all those guys who are regulars on the PGA Tour. So that might change, Berkey, as we get into the major season with the US Open, US PGA, and then the British Open later this year. But certainly, I think those guys are a little bit of a disadvantage heading into the first major of the year at Augusta.
Take me through the Queen Elizabeth Stakes on the weekend, Adam, and the performance of Pride of Jenny, but also the performance, because it's created a lot of talk about the rides from the jockeys that finished behind Pride of Jenny.
Yeah. Yeah, Loz, first of all, I've got to say, I've never seen anything like it, to be honest, in such a major race like that for a horse to lead by 40-odd lengths, it would have been at one stage there, probably over 100 metres. So, first of all, I've got to give credit to the horse, Pride of Jenny herself, Declan Bates, her rider, who has just worked so well with his horse, and Kieran Maher, the trainer, who has done an amazing job with Pride of Jenny in the last 12 to 18 months. So that's the first part that we need to tip our hat to that horse and connections, because she was amazing. The other part of the race, what do we say about the rides in on the chasing pack? Well, to me, they just let her get way too far in front. Like, clearly some of those horses just lost sight of the bunny. And yes, she was going extremely quickly, and you're never going to be able to keep up with her in the early to middle stages of a race like that. But you've got to keep her in sight. And some of the sectionals they were running there, sort of in the middle stages there, 12.5s and 12.2s and 12.1s, probably was not quick enough to be able to keep her in sight. And you look at some of the closing sections from those horses. Look at Via Sistina, who's run second. She's run her last 600 metres in 33 and 55. Now, that goes to show that she had a fair bit up her sleeve and a fair bit in the tank for the final 3 furlongs. I say they all mucked up. They all messed up. They should have been a lot closer than what they were. Would Pride of Jenny still won the race? I think there's a very good chance she still would have. But those other horses were given absolutely no chance, in my opinion. Chris Waller came out after the race and said he was extremely disappointed in some of the rides and his horses didn't have a fair shot. And I have to agree with him.
Got to say, in the Oaks, I was a bit surprised bookies didn't want to take on Orchestral more than they did. And hindsight tells us they should have.
Yeah, they kept her very safe, didn't they, Middo? I thought she would get out a little bit in betting, close to the jump time there, but she was extremely firm favourite. And the tables were turned, weren't they? Peter Moody and Catherine Coleman did an amazing job with this filly. Moody just has this knack of getting his horses ready for these really big grand final races. And Autumn Angel deserved that success. I thought Zardozzi was good in second. Orchestral wasn't bad. But the market had a huge gap between Orchestral and the other two. And it turned out to be that Autumn Angel got the job done. So, yeah, what on connections. I think Orchestral's still a star filly, Middo. We can't deny that. She's going to go on to win many more feature races. But on the day, Autumn Angel was clearly the best horse.
Circle of Fire, great performance in the Sydney Cup.
Yeah, quite emotional, wasn't it, as well, Middo, for Andrea Etzini, this Italian jockey who flew in from Hong Kong to ride Circle of Fire at pretty short notice, it must be said, trying to get down to that 51.5 kilos. We know his connection with Stefano Cerchi, the young jockey who died a couple of weeks ago after that shocking fall at Canberra. So, yeah, obviously a very emotional race there. And Kieran Maher, again, horse on the backup after the chairman's last week. Another lightly raced import, only having his sort of first preparation in Australia, and he's picked up one of our major Group 1s. So I sound like a broken record, but these imports coming down for our major races from sort of a mile and a half up to 2 miles, they just clean up most of the time. And he was the right horse at the right time there on the weekend. Don't want to take too much away from Athabaskan. I thought it was really brave in defeat. And Carla Paul probably got held up at a really crucial stage. But not quite sure if he would have beaten the winner, who was clearly the dominant horse there in the Sydney Cup.
I know we're going to go to the 7 o'clock news, mate. But what did you make of both the Raiders and the Dragons yesterday?
Yeah, first of all, Loz, I did watch that Tigers and Dragons game. It wasn't a great game of football, it must be said. It never really reached any great heights. I thought the Dragons were just okay and did enough to win, but I must admit I was pretty disappointed with the Tigers. I thought they were really flat there yesterday in front of what was a sellout crowd at Campbelltown. I thought that would have been much more up for the contest. So two teams who I still don't think will probably figure in the top eight, but both are steadily improving on previous years. And, geez, I feel sorry for the Titans, Loz. They've been deplorable in the first few weeks of the season, but they weren't bad last night. They really had a crack and had no right to take that game to golden point on the pattern, the play and the flow. And Brian Kelly's sideline conversion, you think, okay, they're a chance, but to be knocked off by a field goal in the last, 30 seconds and not take home any points is really, really cruel. So they're in for a long season. Canberra just keep doing the business and winning the games they probably should. And, interesting day of rugby league yesterday.
Mate, have a good day.
Hey, boys.